Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It is 2:45 and 55 seconds in the Vatican City. And still no white smoke, but we will keep you up to date. Apparently they don't reconvene for another 10 or 15 minutes, but we will bring you any news should it emerge from the chimney on the Sistine Chapel. Now, a difficult subject, especially if you have young listeners with you in the house, the car, or out walking or whatever. Just, it's a difficult but very, very important subject, and especially for men, and we want to thank the people again who contacted us about this. Vincent O'Brien is on the line. Margaret Ronan is on the line, who's Vincent's partner. 51551 is the text number. Vincent, good afternoon.
How's it going? How you been?
Good, good. When did you realise you had penile cancer, Vincent?
Going back to January, I kind of found... I kind of felt ashamed, really, in the penis, and I thought, look, being the typical fella, I said, look, yeah, I'd be fine, like, oh, it may be just an old infection, like, or something like that, like, but I think it was in February then when I kind of, like, this isn't going anywhere, so I kind of Googled this, it's kind of showed up symptoms of penile cancer.
Okay.
And I went to kind of a bit of a week thing where, what do I do? So yeah, I ended up breaking down to herself, and she kind of said, look, I bring the doctor now.
Herself, as you call her, wonderful, wonderful woman. By the way, were you in any pain, Vincent?
No pain. Yeah. I think towards the middle of March, I kind of started kind of getting like a kind of an itch and like an irritation. Okay. Like, and I was like, okay, this isn't right. Like, but that was the only kind of symptom we kind of had, other than just kind of like a lump, like that, maybe the size of a ten cent coin, like, almost.
Okay.
Like.
And just before I'll go to Margaret now in a sec, but were you embarrassed about telling people, or embarrassed about going to the GP, or?
I kind of was, no, to be fair, like, no, when you kind of get kind of infection on the penis, whatever, like, you'd be kind of thinking what case scenario, like, I don't know, I'd prefer to kind of be telling people, like, but, like, a quick chat with Margaret, like, I was like,
let's go to Margaret, and well done you for saying it to Margaret. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, and do you remember the day Vincent said it to you, or brought it to your
attention?
Yeah.
Oh, I do. It was the 18th of February.
Wow.
The day my life changed forever.
Okay. Well, tell us. God, I didn't think you'd actually remember the date. That's incredible.
February.
And Margaret, when Vincent said to you, listen, I have a little lump here.
And like he said to me, I think it's penile cancer. And I said, what's that?
Yeah.
Being ignorant. I actually didn't know. And he said, it's cancer of the penis. So I said, right, get on the phone, get an appointment now. You can't wait around these things. So we got an appointment for the 21st of February. 3 days later, we saw a GP.
Great.
We were referred to a urologist straight away. We had to wait, I think it was 5.5 weeks before we actually got to see the urologist.
Okay.
They're absolutely amazing. They were from day one when we went up there.
Yeah.
So the, when did he go in? He went in the 7th of April to have the biopsy done, but they had to cancel it because his blood pressure was through the roof.
Yeah.
They found out he had a high blood pressure, and they found out that week as well that he has cardiomyopathy as well.
Okay.
So it's been a difficult road. So they kept him in for 4 days, sent him home with medication, and brought him back the 14th of April, where they were able to do the biopsy and the dorsal slit for him.
But the minute he said it to you, Margaret, you were adamant. You didn't hesitate.
No.
You didn't say, as others might say, oh, let's Google this before we...
No.
Brilliant.
No, because it's like this. If I went to him and I said, look, I'm after finding a lump, I'd like him to think, right, doctors, now I'll support you.
Great.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. So you went, so it's we're going back to February. You got to the GP quickly. The GP, where are you referred to for penile cancer?
We were referred to a hospital in Cork. Are we allowed to mention the name of the hospital?
Of course.
We were the Mercy in Cork.
Great
hospital.
We went
hospital, up there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. In fairness, I cannot praise them enough. They've been fantastic from day one for him. But they said they refer him to, am I allowed to say the name of the hospital in Cork?
Course.
In Dublin?
Yes, of course.
Beaumont Cancer Centre in Beaumont.
Another great hospital. We're blessed.
Another fantastic hospital. But they referred him there because the surgeon up there is top notch.
Okay. And that is known as the National Penile Cancer Centre. You would never heard of penile cancer.
No, never.
Yeah.
Never. Because if you think about it, like prostate cancer, there's 3,300 cases a year.
Yeah.
And if you go to, and even if you think of breast cancer, there's only 30 cases a year, where this, there's only 60 cases of penile cancer a year.
Yeah, and we know, thankfully, through breast check and bowel check and everything, that people really are encouraged. Come on, earlier the better. Don't be one bit embarrassed.
Prevention, absolutely. We were embarrassed to say, like I know himself was embarrassed to say, I have penis cancer. But we discussed it the other day and he decided, I'm going to own this and I'm going to raise awareness.
Yeah.
If I can help one male, he said, he's done something.
Yeah.
He's been very strong, been very, very brave, he has been.
And so have you, obviously. Vincent, when you hear Margaret say that, because you said at the start you were kind of a little bit critical of yourself. I saw a lump, I was a little bit embarrassed, and it'll be grand in a few weeks. But Margaret's saying you were... Okay, the line seems to be gone, we get it back. But Margaret...
He was very good. Like, he's checking on me, are you okay?
Yeah.
He's checking on family members. Are ye okay? I'll be fine. I'll be grand.
Okay.
But then when we went to Beaumont on the 1st of May, and we were told by the surgeon, this is as serious as it gets.
Okay.
You need to be on the theatre, but I only get one slot a month and there's four ahead of you. You could be waiting up to 2 months.
Oh, God.
And it's an aggressive cancer. It's growing rapidly.
Yeah.
So you were there
together.
Yeah, I go to every appointment with him because I think it's important to support him.
Yeah, and would you ask questions, Margaret? Would you?
Oh yeah, I've asked loads of questions.
Brilliant.
I've asked what's the survival rate? I've asked all this, and they said they really can't tell me any of that until they go in.
Yeah.
Because he will not know until he goes in. They said it could be a partial removal of the penis or a radical removal of the penis, which is all of it.
Yeah.
That's how serious it is. And then to be told we have to wait 2 months, if not more, for a surgery to save his life and to stop it spreading.
And the surgeon said, I only have one session a week in the theatre.
A month. That, it's not good enough. I'm sorry. It's not good enough. This day and age, it's not. And all the poor people that are waiting, the men that are having to wait and just pray to God that it doesn't spread. I never thought cancer would affect me as a person, but it's affected me and my whole family. And we have a very young child as well.
Yeah, you have a five-year-old.
Yeah, we have a five-year-old and we were trying to keep things as normal as possible for her. We're telling her daddy's an owie in his tummy and daddy's going to get sicker to get better.
Yeah.
That's the way we've left it to her. And we've made a game about we're going to dye daddy's hair and we're going to shave it. So we'll make it a game for her, but it's important for her to know too her daddy is a warrior and her daddy is a fighter.
Yeah.
But to protect her in a way that she'll grow it. And still be our happy, funny little girl.
Yeah, and I know, and Vincent is back there now. But Margaret just said, Vincent, that you're a warrior. But are you a warrior?
I go to work every evening worrying about it. I wake up every morning worrying about it. It's just, even right now, even I'm getting personal knowing about it and stuff like this. I don't know what my future entails. You know what I mean? Every time the phone rings, I'm kind of, Jesus Christ, what's this? So, I mean, this, so. It's hard, like, really hard. Like, when I go to the toilet, I know, I kind of, my hand be on it, like, and I can feel a lump, like, oh, Jesus Christ, you can't have to get bigger or what's this, I mean.
And in terms of pain or discomfort, has that changed?
I think it's more discomfort rather than pain. There is pain there, but, like, it's manageable. It's no, like, the last thing I want to be doing is dosing myself up and playing good and whatnot, like. But it just the discomfort there now is quite it's fairly bad, like. Don't want to be fair, like.
So there's four. The surgeon said there's four people ahead of you.
Yeah.
I've only one session. So did he? And it's very difficult, I know. Did he give any a date? Did he give an indication of a date? No.
No, it was just 2 months. Two months. That's all. And what did that mean for me? Like, he said, look, basically, you just have to sit and wait. It's hard to kind of it's hard to take in, really. Like, you just told me that I have a cancer that will kill me, but yet I had to wait 2 months. Before I even get looked at, really,
I don't want to be putting words into anyone's mouth, but did the surgeon say, okay, I've only one session, but I am available to do more?
Yeah, he said that, like, he wanted the extra slot, like, but he just not getting them, like, no, that, because there is people out there that is kind of suffering from this, and that he they're willing to help them. But he just can't seem to get the facility to actually do it.
Yeah, we spoke to Peter Robbie before. Just listen back. I just want to listen to this piece by Peter Robbie, who was on a couple of years ago talking about penile cancer.
I said, "Tell me," I said, "is this serious?" And he looked at me, and there was a slight pause, and he said, "Yes, this is extremely serious."
Right.
So I felt my wife stiffen beside me. I said, "Is this survivable?" And again, there was that slight pause. And then he said, I really don't know. And that's the moment where the little hairs went up in the back of my neck.
Now, it was survivable. That's why I want to play you that, Vincent. And, okay. When you hear cancer, obviously you say, well, is there anything they can do in the meantime? Radiotherapy, chemotherapy, medication.
Yeah, I asked that. Like, we both asked that, like, and he kind of said, "No, look, the only thing they do is that you go in, do the surgery, remove the tumor, and then I know what I'm working with." Then he said, like.
"Yeah."
But he basically kind of said, like, "No, that has to go as soon as possible, because he had a look at it and whatever, and he said it probably one of the biggest he's seen." Like, it's gone from a 10-cent coin now to just. Wrapping around the head of my penis, like, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, let's hope this you're a very brave decision to go public and talk about it. But now this is the response, Vince.
I had to because like I said, like, they heard me thinking, it's a grand only infection, but like, it was actually something fairly serious, like, very serious.
Yeah.
And like, God, you know, there's probably a fellow out there on the same as me with a little itch there. Like, that's fucking annoying me. Like, no,
right. You're right. Do something about it. This is a statement, Vincent, from the HSE. Now, I think the last line might give you some little reason for a little bit more prospect time-wise, if we can get him to stick to it. Penile cancer is a very rare but potentially devastating form of cancer, you know that, affecting 60 men annually in Ireland, typically over 50 years of age, though it also can impact younger men as young as 30. The National Penile Cancer Service, led by consultant urologist Mr. Ivor Cullen at Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, is Ireland's designated referral centre for penile cancer treatment. He is the only surgeon in Ireland working in this field at the moment. Beaumont has seen a high success rate in treating this very aggressive cancer, and lots of patients will undergo phallus or penis preservation surgery or penile reconstruction surgery. Early detection of this cancer and specialised centralised care for better survival rates and quality of life. Approximately 5 or 6 penile cancer operations per month are performed at the National Centre. There are plans to increase the number of penectomy surgeries performed in Ireland in the near future with the appointment of a second surgeon. Now, as the fellow said, but the appointment of a second surgeon, but they say clearly, the HSE, 5 or 6 cancer. If that was 5 or 6 and you say, Prof Cullen said there's 4 ahead of you, anyway, we can only live in hope and hope that powerful people hear this, and if there's anything that can be done, say is Peter, was Peter there? He was there a second ago. Is Peter Robbie gone? He might come back in a sec. Okay, because I want other men especially, and indeed, as we discovered, Margaret, you want other women as well to be aware of.
Absolutely. I have two sons myself, and I have had the chat with them. You need to check.
The mother, the wife, the snorter, whatever. They all should be made aware too. Like, if their husband or son or whatever approached them with an issue, like, no.
Yeah.
Like, women should be able to kind of raise. We need to get on to it. Like Margaret did to me now.
Yeah.
She's got to the doctor now. Don't wait.
Yeah.
That's what I done. And I think it's probably the biggest mistake I ever done. Like, I just kind of told myself, like, I'd be grand.
But you did it. I know. Don't be.
I'm just praying that I did get it all this. I'm on here because lads out there, get yourself checked.
Yeah.
And don't kind of self-diagnose yourselves and think it's okay. Like, you know what I mean?
Okay. Stay with us, Margaret. We're talking to Margaret Ronan, and Vincent O'Brien have contacted us about Vincent's diagnosis of penile cancer, and he's on a waiting list for treatment. There's one surgeon in Ireland who deals with this, and it's based in Beaumont Hospital, but he was told quite clearly by the surgeon that we need to deal with this properly. Stay with us, Margaret and Vincent. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie, Vincent and Margaret are trying to, and they are, in a very vivid and powerful way, raise the issue of men being very, very quick and conscious if they have any issues in the penile area. Now, Peter, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. How long before you realised that you should go and get a diagnosis, Peter?
Oh, well, going back to it, I mean, it was one of these things that the symptoms were so slight for me that I assumed that I had, like a lot of men of my age, being 66 odd, I assumed it was something to do with my prostate, even though I got the prostate checked and I got the blood checked. But there was something there that wasn't quite right, but I wasn't in pain. And it was one of these things that just nagged away until something clicked and I said, no, it's not quite right. And luckily, I have a very good doctor who picked up on it, sent me to a urologist who sent me to Ivor Cullen, and then it all shut off. And incidentally, it was tomorrow 1 year ago I received the bad news from Ivor. It's very current. It's in my head. So when I heard Vincent on, it kind of, the little hairs went up in the back of my neck again. But before I say anything, may I just congratulate Vincent on coming forward. I know how earth-shattering it is to get a diagnosis like he has. It changes your life fundamentally, but the thing to remember is it changes your life. It doesn't end your life. I mean, I've been going through chemo now because I was unlucky. It went to my lungs a bit. But that said, I'm still here. I'm still working away. So life doesn't end provided you go forward and you put your hand up and say, look, there's something not quite right. And then, fingers crossed, they can do something about it. And the important thing is to come forward. And well done, Margaret, because I know myself with my wife, Nora, she's the one who would bully me. You know, she's the one who would say, no, don't be stupid. Do it. And we need the women of Ireland to get behind the men of Ireland and make sure that they're not slow in coming forward.
And Peter, how long do you reckon before you said it to your GP, insofar as you can remember?
Well, because I'd been going to him with the prostate anyway.
It was only
when I got an infection and I began to get a little bit of blood every now and again, and I'd been to him and we treated it as an infection, and then I got another one so many months later, and he said, his words were something along the lines of, it's very unusual for a man to get a urinary tract infection, maybe we'd better go and have a look at this, just to be on the safe side. So that was the thing. Had I not had the bit of blood, I probably would have just left it.
Yeah.
And then when I went to see Ivor, I was incredibly lucky because the thing I had was, as Vincent said, like my one was very rare, very aggressive, very large. And Ivor said, I'm putting you on my urgent list. Mm-hmm. And he said, you're number 7. Now, okay. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I was operated in within 10 days.
Wow.
Which was, you know, these things seem to have a mind of their own, and they do grow very quickly. But I was with Ivor today, funnily enough, just going to have a chat. So it's all coming in together. The most important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is that scandalous fact that he gets one operation list per month, because penile cancer and urethral cancer. It changes people's lives so fundamentally, at such a fundamental level. Everything changes for a man's point of view, and that should be treated as something a little bit out of the ordinary. And even in Beaumont, I was chatting to Ivor today, and he was saying that really, when you come in with something like that, where to even go and talk to someone is a strain and puts you under pressure. Something simple like having a car park that's close to the office where you're going to make it easier.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, everything should be done to make a visit to see a specialist or something like this. It should be made as easy as possible because, God knows, you're going through all sorts of stuff in your head. You know, things are tumbling around there that no man should ever think of. Yeah. But now we have to, you know. So, yes... Yeah.
So you're just reiterating. You're saying last year it was the same. There's only one treatment day a month.
That's it. Now I didn't understand at the time. I didn't really take on board what he was saying about how little time he had. But I mean, he's got to do. I don't know how long an operation takes. 4 or 5 hours. I really don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember how long mine took, but it was in the you know 3, 4, or 5 hours range. Now, you know how long can one surgeon operate for if he's only got one day?
Exactly.
How many cases can he get through?
Yeah.
So you're talking about people like Vincent who were told, no, sorry, the earliest I can do it is. And for every single day that you're told you have to wait, I mean, that's terrible. And I know people will say there's not enough money and we've got to have money for this, that and the other, and it's all coming out of a central pot. But this is something so awful and fundamental that I think... I mean, the money must be found from somewhere. If it's another surgeon or another two surgeons or another team or another hospital, but there needs to be more done for this particular illness.
And as you say, Ivor Cullen, I presume, is a prof with that level of skill and expertise. It was the same last year. And now the HSE are saying it will be changing quickly, we hope, because we're looking to appoint a second surgeon.
Yeah, we'll be looking to... I mean, how long does that take? You know, you've got to find a surgeon with the level of skill required. You've then got to come to a contract. You've got to figure out the money. Where is he going to operate? How do you fit him in? This, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it could take another year. Could take another 2 years. It needs to be... I mean, it needs to be done with a level of extreme urgency, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, when Simon Harris was Minister for Health, he's not honest, under scoliosis, he said, we will move heaven. I know there's still challenges, to say the least. But he said, we will fly children to the UK. Mm-hmm. We will fly them to New York, I think he actually said it once. I know, Peter, you have enough to be talking about. But in your conversations, did that ever emerge?
Not going abroad for my particular operation, because the particular operation I had was done very quickly.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, I've had a slight problem. I have a catheter in, which is permanent.
Okay.
And that's been causing me grief. Now, I think that's more that whatever pain threshold I have or whatever way my body's put together, I'm very, very sensitive. Now, Ivor has mentioned that there is a procedure. It's an odd one where you connect the bladder to the appendix and the appendix to the stomach wall and a little hole. So when you want to pee, instead of having a tube that's permanently in your bladder, you stick a little catheter in and you pee through that.
Yeah.
Now, apparently he was saying that would have to be done in London. So, I mean, that's just something that happens to tune in with going abroad for surgery. Whether Whether going abroad for the original operation is mm-hmm. a runner, I don't know. I assume they have a level of expertise abroad, okay. but I don't know enough about it. But I mean, if that was the alternative, if it was me and I was told I had to wait a month or 2 months or 3 months for something that I was told was extremely urgent, I would say, send me abroad, send me somewhere that yeah. speaks English and let me get an operation, yeah. you know.
And Vincent and Margaret, Vincent, is it what is it like for you listening to Peter? Who's been through this?
Yeah, no, he definitely reassured me on a few things. Within this, but at the same time, the cataract, you know, and stuff like that. Like, I'm only 35 days somewhere, like, and yeah. do I want to spend another 40, 50 years there with a cataract? You know what I can imagine?
Vincent, can I speak to Vincent there for 1 second?
Of course you can, yes.
Yeah, things like the catheter. I wouldn't worry about initially. It's a terrible imposition and it's a terrible yeah. shock. All that kind of stuff, all that fiddling around and things being added and things hanging out here. Mm. You will, even though I've had a slight problem with it, apparently not many people do. And I would say that you will get used to that very quickly. And given yeah. the alternative of you know what your choices are, I embrace it. You'll get through that. Trust me. The most important thing is to survive and have a quality of life. Okay. And you will have that.
And as yeah. you say that, Vincent, listen to and Peter and Margaret. Frank Doyle is in Wicklow. Frank, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Good news.
Very good news, Joe. Like Peter there, it's a year today. I first went to my doctor and over the period of the year. But just to make Vincent feel a lot more comforting and better, yeah. I was in with Ivor Cullen this morning
okay.
for results of a lot of issues.
Okay.
And I got completely the all clear.
Oh, well done. Congratulations. Well done to everyone involved, the medics especially, and yeah. Ivor's team. What's today's anniversary? It was this day last year.
This day last year, Joe, I went to my GP.
Okay.
I had a discharge that I was worried about over a week
okay.
or so. And eventually I found this tiny, tiny little lump,
yeah.
which really concerned me. So I went to my doctor,
okay.
who very quickly, thank God, referred me to a urologist in Loughlin's Town Hospital
okay.
in South County Dublin.
South Dublin,
and,
yeah.
Can I mention her name, Joe?
Yeah, of course, yeah, absolutely.
It was Aisling Loomy.
These are great people.
She's a urologist in Loughlinstown. Yeah. So that was on a Tuesday, Joe, and on the following Friday, Joe, she had me in Vincent's Hospital in the theatre for surgery.
Okay. And then when were you referred on to Ivor?
Straight after that surgery.
Okay.
Straight after that surgery. And then the following, I was seeing Ivor for a few months after that. Eventually I went back in and he found another problem. What happened was when they removed the foreskin,
yeah, okay.
they found three tumors on the foreskin, which they removed successfully. There was two tumors left on the penis, which they couldn't
okay.
get to. But eventually, after a month or two, they had started to activate. And I went back into Bowman then for surgery on the penis, which he told me he'd have to remove the head of the penis.
Okay.
Which they did successfully, Joe. And he gave me an option of a skin graft to rebuild the head.
Okay.
And the skin graft came from the thigh,
okay.
which I agreed
yeah.
on that. So I was in hospital for 10 days after that
yeah.
in Beaumont, which was very, very good. Everybody was so great and understanding. Again, like Peter was saying, you know, I had the catheter.
Yeah.
It is uncomfortable, but it has to be done.
Yeah.
It's only for a while,
okay.
and it done the job. So I eventually got that out. I had to go back after a few times. Eventually, I went back. They got the results of that penile the head taken off.
They
got the result, and they found that the tumours were a lot deeper than they expected them to be.
Okay.
And for that reason, they wanted to do a biopsy on the lymph nodes, which I got done in March. Mm-hmm. March. That was quite a... I just thought it would be pinhole surgery, but it's actually not. They have to do two incisions on either side of your groin, which takes leaves you in hospital for 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
But, Joe, the good news here is that I had to go back and see Ivor this morning to get the results of everything, and he cleared me 100%.
Great. But you heard, Frank, you heard Vincent's worry there about catheters and on men.
I did panic, but in hindsight, that's what we do. And believe me, Vincent, I had a catheter. It's very uncomfortable. It's something you really have to get used to, but it's something that has to be done. It's not bad. Yeah. You will get used to it very quickly. And even with the lymph nodes, I had drainage tubes attached to me for a month after that, which I only got taken away a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Again, you're trying to shower with these things on you.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable to sleep at night, but believe me, Vincent, it is nothing to worry about.
Thanks for
it's
that.
It's just part of the process.
Yeah.
And thanks, Frank. And but Vincent, I know you're worried about a lot.
That's out there, you know, that we're worried about things and stuff. I'm worried because I don't know what's going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have the full understanding. I don't. Like, as he said to me that day, and since he doesn't even know what he's really even doing, like, you know? All he knows, he had to get in there and to remove the tumor, and then he'd know what he's talking with him, like, you know?
But remember also what Peter said there. He was talking about a different procedure, about the catheter and the appendix, that things are moving on quickly in the medical world. They do move on quickly. Now, the problem seems to be staff. But the whole the area is moving on quickly. So I know on the one hand you think, okay, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks even. But time can sometimes be can help us, especially in the medical world. Holly Niralik. Holly, good afternoon.
Hi there, good afternoon.
How are you? You're listening to the programme. Well, your auntie heard the item and rang you. So thanks to your auntie, Holly. Really appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks
to Shuan. It's a good Shuan.
Is
this Shuan from this, previously of this organisation?
Yes.
Best wishes indeed. To Shuan. Great person.
Yeah.
Great person.
I know.
And tell us, okay, so Shuan rang you and said, listen, and what is your area of expertise?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to take too much airtime away from obviously these men who've, you know, made a really brave decision to call in and talk about this problem. But yeah, I've worked in a penile cancer team in London, just coming up to 3 years now, Southwest London, a place called St. George's. I've been a consultant for just about a year now.
Okay.
And I treat and see men with penile cancer almost every day of the week. And really, I just was really taken aback by the fact you're talking about this topic on the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel really, really strongly, you know, just how devastating the consequences of this rare cancer can be. But it's equally as devastating how, like, under-discussed and publicised this condition is. And actually, and I hope and think this will be the case for Vincent, like, if we can treat this cancer well, if we catch it at the right time or even after, we can treat this and we can beat it. We treat it aggressively, we treat it comprehensively, and I just want to reassure Vincent, I don't know Ivor Cullen myself, but I know he's fantastic by reputation. Yeah. I'm sure he will sort the problem out. But yeah, I really just want to, because this is a rare cancer. People don't talk about it. And there's my rare little cancer, you know, being discussed on your show and Vincent and everyone calling in. So I just wanted to say that.
And Holly, you might have heard, but earlier, but Margaret, who's Vincent's partner, the moment she heard him say it, he eventually told her, she sprung into action. She said, don't be one bit embarrassed, GP, immediately. And she took over. So it's important, which you're highlighting, to say to everybody, don't be afraid of saying it. Don't be afraid of going for a diagnosis. And the earlier, the better.
Not absolutely. I mean, you know, most men, so many of my patients, they never even knew that they could get cancer of the penis.
Yeah.
You know, that it existed as a condition. You know, I'm going to speak very openly and candidly here.
Please do, yes.
If you don't mind. I mean, you know, some men don't know much about the foreskin. Tight foreskins for a really long time, you know, can be a risk factor and a problem. You know, even if we can educate, you know, boys, adolescents from an early age, if we talk about it openly, about examining, if you find a little red patch or a lump, you know, come and see us. You know, even in the hospital, like, we see patients within 2 to 3 days if they're worried about something. The GPs give us a call, we get them straight in. Our clinic doesn't even really stop. It doesn't have a finish time in the evening. We just go on. So any bit that, you know, you're doing a great thing by discussing this, and Vincent's doing a great thing by calling in. But it boils down to awareness.
Yeah. So you say even persistent tight foreskin.
Yeah.
Please say it to your GP. Don't be afraid to say it.
Yeah, just even small things, you know, because if the foreskin is really, really tight, you can't really see well what's under there.
Yes,
you know,
of course,
it's not an absolute cause of the condition.
Yeah.
But you can imagine it might be problematic if it's a bit tight and sore and you can't quite, you know, see what's going on there. And then, you know, two and two, you know, and that's it. Like, there's lots of small things that we can do about educating people about cancer exists, how, you know, what to look out for. And then even down the line, when it comes to treatment, you know, I'm sure when most men, you know, especially young men, might Google treatment for penile cancer, you know, what does it look like afterwards? You know, all of these kind of things you would be thinking about as a patient. There's not much out there. There's not much online, which is obviously people's primary source of information now. You know, what's my penis going to look like if we have a graft, if I don't? How's it going to work? What's the function going to be like? All this kind of thing. So it's a rare cancer. So when it does happen to someone, there's equally not a huge, you know, I personally don't think like a huge availability of information for these men. And they may never probably have never met someone who has had the condition. Because then some men who have the condition, they don't want to talk about it. You know, they're embarrassed. If they don't have a partner, they may feel isolated, etc. So my life's goal is to go embark on a campaign. Yeah. Maybe you'll join me to raise awareness.
Well,
of
you're
condition.
Doing an incredible job. And the other thing that Margaret said, I don't know if you heard the start of it, Holly, is Margaret said the minute that Vincent mentioned a lump, she said, "Hang on a minute. If I find a lump, Vincent will insist I go to a hospital ASAP. But for men to find a lump for some reason." Because it's not the way you reacted, Margaret. The minute you heard, because she can never remind Holly of the date that he said it to you, because you actually remembered the date.
It was the 18th of February. We were actually gone for a drive, and he said to me, "I have something to tell you." And I looked at him; he was crying. I said, "Pull in the car. I found a lump, and I think it's penile cancer." He said, and I goes, "What's that?" Being ignorant to the fact I never knew what it was, so he said, "It's a cancer of the penis." And I said, "Get on the phone now. Make an appointment. I'll go with you." So we got an appointment for 3 days later. We went up. The doctor referred him to a urologist. And I said, "Are you being overly cautious?" And he said, "No, I'm not."
Yeah.
So I kind of knew him.
You didn't have to be overly cautious.
Yeah. No, and he had a problem, phimosis of the foreskin anyway. He had a tight foreskin.
Yeah.
So they couldn't properly examine it. So we had a 5.5 wait before we got to the Mercy in Cork as well, which time is of the essence in things like this.
Yeah.
But listen, what you've just described is a common scenario, right? You know, just to reassure you, a lot of patients, they don't present, you know, immediately. And there can be really, really good outcomes, okay? So I won't go into too much on the airwaves, right?
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I would be very optimistic, honestly.
Fantastic. No, but I think this needs to be taught in sexual education, in the schools. This needs to be taught to young lads.
completely.
You can't just explain about STDs and whatever, but they need to be taught how to check themselves. I'm sorry, but it's not been done enough.
Yeah.
And we've come such a long way, like public health-wise, with sexually transmitted infections. Do you know what I mean? Reducing the taboo of HIV and lots of things
should
that
be
were
off the
previously...
table.
Yeah, completely agree. Because, you know, as you say, for the small number of men that present very late or unfortunately, you know, the cancer is advanced, you know, if there is more awareness and, you know, public health, I would say, like absolute comprehensive involvement with schools and stuff in any form we can from early, you know, the earlier the better, like with everything. But, you know, men and they get very scared when they see something wrong down there, It's really scary because it's a sensitive area, right? You think, oh, gosh, what if I have to have a biopsy and surgery? This is terrifying, and it can be so terrifying, the concept of it, then that you just put it to bed, you know?
And information is key here. That's what we're trying to get across.
Yeah.
You need to know what you're looking for. It's as simple as women know how to look for breast cancer. We need to look, we know for all these changes, but it's not the same for men. It's not. There's not enough education. There's not enough pamphlets. There's not enough talks about this for men. It's embarrassing. I think for a man to talk about their penis, it's embarrassing.
Well, at the end of the day, it's breaking down barriers. It's about anatomy, isn't it? You know, this is part of the body. You know, it's not on display, etc. It's very private. You know.
No, I get you.
All these kind of things. But I completely agree.
And because Ali and Margaret and Vincent, because men, even the thought of having your penis removed,
it's heart wrenching for me. I can't imagine what it's like for him.
Yeah.
But the goal of all surgical treatment is obviously whenever it's safe to do so, is to preserve as much as possible and rebuild what we can. So that's always the goal, and that's always to be respected. So I would always remain optimistic. Yeah, definitely.
And
plenty,
Holly,
we can do. I know someone mentioned skin grafts and things. We do this a lot.
Okay. And Holly, going forward, there was talk about the HPV vaccine. Is there any prevention?
I mean, it's really interesting, the HPV vaccine. As far as I know, I don't think there's ever been, a clinical trial specifically asking the question or examining the reduction in pre-cancer or cancer of the penis in people who've had the vaccine, because the incidence of the cancer or the event is so rare. You see, you'd need thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of participants, right? Whereas I think the positive effect on cervical cancer, obviously it's a more prevalent cancer. But in theory, the HPV vaccine, I think, makes sense completely. And I know, obviously, in the small world of men treated for penile cancer over here, we do mention the HPV vaccine to our patients.
Mm-hmm.
From my own knowledge, it's not approved on the NHS, which is the healthcare system I work in. But a lot of our younger patients access it privately. From memory, I can't remember how much it costs. There's more than one vaccine, I think, perhaps 6 months apart. I'd have to fact-check myself on that. But yes, in theory, I think it's very interesting and makes sense. But there's no direct evidence yet.
Vincent... I hope you find what Dr. Ní Rathaulaigh said reassuring. Obviously,
as she said,
she can't do a diagnosis over the air. Neither will we ever ask for that. But you're not alone, Vincent. Is that a glib thing for me to say?
Yeah.
You're not alone.
As I even kind of said to Dara Cancer Society on the phone the other day, it's the people that you are involved with that I could talk to, like, and stuff, like, you know, that go through that experience.
Well, you're here
already with you now. I've already kind of spoken to two fellas there,
Listen briefly to Michael, because he has to go quickly. Michael in Kildare. Michael, you're a survivor of penile cancer.
Yes, Joe. That's right, Joe. I just want to highlight there my situation. I suppose, first of all, Joe, when it happened in 2014, which I was attending, can I name the professor up in JJ?
I was attending
Professor Thomas Lynch in James's Hospital for another area in that particular area, if you want to know, you know, that particular area. And that was in 2013, end of November, I think it was 13. I had a small procedure with him. And then I went back for a checkup on the... I could have been in around mid-January, but my own GP back in Kildare, he was conscious of something that was going on with me in the penis area. So,
okay.
So it was like I went for two checks, if you want to call it that, on the one day. One to look after the procedure I had in November, and then Professor Thomas Lynch just said to me, who's with you today?
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that to me, I sort of said, oh, something wrong here. So what happened next was, I said, my wife is with me. He said, I'm going to have to bring her in. So he brought her in, and he said to me, very, very short, he says, you have a cancerous tumour on your penis.
Yeah.
Like that, within about, so I fell flat. And he says, look at this. He says, what we can do is, I'm sending you to London. He mentioned the hospital in London.
Okay.
And you'll be going next Wednesday. Now, this was on a Thursday. So he said, you'll be going next Wednesday and you have to fill in all the overseas paperwork and all of that. Yeah. So we didn't. He just handed us all the paperwork. We got it. No, actually, we got the paperwork sent over to us from an office in Dublin from a friend of ours. And we were going through it and she was like double dutch to us. But his secretary just said, look at you don't need that, you don't need that, you do need that. So we short-circuited everything and we were leaving the hospital, the private clinics in James's, about, say, 2 hours after the initial consultation with him.
Okay.
And he says, I'm processing this now. That's exactly what he says. He had it rolled up like a Mick O'Dwyer's program on the side of the pitch. He said, I'm processing this now. So that was on a Thursday, and on Saturday morning, he rang me. He said to me, you're not going to London. There's a man called Mr. Paul Hegarty from the Mater Private in Cork. It was the new Mater Private at the time. And he says, he's taken over your case. And he says, he'll be ringing you on Monday. Not alone did he ring me on the Monday, he rang me about 15, 20 minutes after Mr. Professor Thomas Lynch got off the phone. And he said to me, I've taken over your case. Now, we had healthcare, Joe. That's the thing I want to point out. We had healthcare. So he just said, look, I'm taking over your case. And he said, my secretary will be on to you on Monday morning. And she was on to me Monday morning, and I had to do a series of tests up in James's Hospital between the Monday and the Friday. And the tests consisted of PET scans, other sort of scans, and also he told me to get a driver, not to drive, because you have to be stress-free going into all these places. So that was... I met him in Eccles Street then in Dublin, across from the Mater in Dublin, on this Friday morning, and he said to me, yes, I've looked at your scans, it was all on the disc, and he said, I want you down in the Mater Private in Cork on Wednesday.
Okay.
And I was there at 9 o'clock in the morning. I was in the bed at 10 past 9. I was in theatre about 10:30, 20 to 11. And I woke up about 11 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
And I was there for maybe, I don't know, 5-6 days, being very well looked after by a male nurse and a female nurse.
This was, what, over a decade ago at this stage, Michael?
This was 2014, Joe.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're 25, yeah, so we're...
So, 11 years ago.
Clear. Brilliant.
And I was in my late 50s, very late 50s.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so what happened next door was 10 weeks later, Joe, I had to go back up for a consultation with him in the Mater Private in Dublin. And when I went back up, he said to me, we were wondering what was going on, because he had me for about 2 or 3 hours. And there was all sorts of stuff going on, tests here and tests there, and different lads coming in to see me and all that carry on. The next thing, he came in himself, and he says, we're keeping you in. And he says, your tumour is not fully gone.
Okay.
And he says, I'm glad, which is unusual. He says, that is not fully gone, because I went to the margins the first time, which I didn't really understand what he was talking about at the time. But he says, I will get the rest of it. And I said, when are you going to do it? He says, I'm going to do it today. And I was brought back down I was put into a ward in the hospital, and I was operated on that night, and they held on to me for another 2 days, 3 days.
Okay.
Now, since that, I've had a proper full life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, great.
And everything is grand. And I've had a few little... I was only with him there in September again, over other little things in the urology area.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no danger of anything. But the point, Joe, the reason I rang in was it was early detection, which was which was number one. And the second thing was when I initially heard your first caller, obviously was going through the system, the public system, whereas I had I had healthcare, and you know, and I'm not boasting on but having healthcare. It's just that the two-tier system.
Yeah, we've dealt with that, but the situation we're in, we are where we are. But Vincent is in the system with Ivor, with Prof Cullen. And hopefully we'll move forward. Michael, that's good news from you. Thanks again. And really, really appreciate it. Holly, Neil Haldick, in the UK, is there a campaign? Is there a...
No. The short answer is no.
Sadly.
Okay. So I suppose, it's up to us, I guess, people in the specialty and in the field to try and work out how the best way would be to deliver one. But yes, there's not a specific one.
The HSE say they hope to appoint a second surgeon soon. Are there many people in your area qualified?
I mean, it's really an area that you sub-specialise in once you come to the end and finish your surgical training. There's a number of people that are interested in it, but generally speaking, it's a relatively niche sub-specialty. There's 5 consultants in my department, and we have quite a busy service.
And are you the main hospital in the capital for?
There's 2 large hospitals in London that deal with penile cancer. One is UCLH, University College Hospital London, and the other is ours, St George's Hospital. We're a high volume service, I would say, so we're quite busy. We do a lot of cases.
But are there other centres around? Obviously, the population is 10 times what we are, but are there other centres around the country?
There are. I think there's 8 in total.
Okay.
There's not many. It's what's called like super specialised or tertiary referral care.
Yeah. Okay.
So because of the specialised nature of the surgery and the rarity of the disease, you need to concentrate the skill mix for the benefit of the patients and outcomes in specific centres. So I think there's either 8 in the UK or England or 5 in England.
And on a team, Holly, how many are we looking at? 5, 6 different medics of different angles and specialities. Is that the way? It's not just one person. You need every medic is part of a team.
Absolutely. I mean, the treatment of penile cancer primarily is surgical, so you need surgeons.
And
generally speaking, these are urologists with a subspecialty interest in like genitourethral cancer and surgery. Obviously, oncologists play a really important role in the treatment afterwards if the patient needs radiotherapy, chemotherapy, or both. But predominantly, it's like a surgically driven specialty. So yeah, you need access to surgeons who are skilled and have an interest in this area. We have a huge interest in this disease in St George's. So we welcome any patients anytime if anyone ever is ever wants to reach out.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Holly. How long are you in the UK? Well, you could have been born there.
I went to medical school there.
Okay.
I didn't quite make it at the leaving, so I graduated in 2011.
I don't believe you.
That's I've been there a long time.
Okay, so the end line in the HSE statement is a little bit hopeful about the future, and they hope to improve different. They are very, very conscious of it. And there seems to be an enormous amount of one revelation, but two, goodwill in terms of encouraging people to come forward and encouraging people to move quickly.
Yeah.
So, Holly, thanks indeed. Vincent, I'll say thanks to Holly on your behalf, Vincent, and all the other medics. I hope, I know it's a radio program, we're not going to change the world, but I hope it's given you some solace. Margaret, you're going to get a medal because you were so on the ball. Now, Vincent is great as well. So maybe things will change quicker than, and positively quicker than we hope.
Please God.
And you've a great memory for dates. You really have. You've a great memory. You've a great memory. And kind regards to you, Vincent, Anna, Vincent, Anna, your gorgeous daughter as well. Thanks indeed. Joe at rte.ie. Good morning.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Has David Gray's music suddenly turned into insight in terms of CITE, rather? I know he's great music, White Ladder. Eamon, what happened at the latest David Gray concert, which was last Friday? Somebody threw, what did they throw at you, a chair?
No, they didn't throw it at me, they threw a chair into the crowd, yeah. There was at least chairs behind where we were sitting in Block A.
Yeah.
And, there was nobody in them when we got to our seats before the concert started.
Okay.
But 10 minutes into the concert, a group of young lads and lassies come in and sat in these chairs, about six or seven of them. I don't know the exact number, but they were having a great night. They were very boisterous and loud and not even listening to the music, to be honest, which was frustrating some of the people. And myself, they were in Group A. So a bit of argy-bargy started between them. And the next thing, this, I was sitting with, just still trying to listen to what David Gray was saying.
Yeah.
And this chair was flying past her head and hit this poor lady about seven rows in front of us in the back of her head.
But David Gray complained before about drunkenness at his concert in April, and people were complaining about it.
Yeah.
And it's not as if he isn't in a 72-piece massive band that would drown out any hecklers.
Exactly.
It is bizarre. It is the most bizarre.
It is. I mean, I've been at the darts industry arena, and you know what the darts are like. You know what to expect.
They're great.
It's going to be
boisterous. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen anybody throw a chair. But I couldn't believe there was loose chairs just sitting there anyway.
Yeah,
like you can't book these loose chairs in Ticketmaster.
Okay.
I believe, I've looked into it since, and I believe that they're supposed to be for people with wheelchairs. But there was definitely, I don't know why it's for the wheelchair in, there was that many of these chairs. And the people that were in those chairs definitely weren't with anybody in a wheelchair.
Well, the three arenas say they found a culprit and he or she was ejected anyway. I'm more baffled by the why David Gray, White Ladder, and Babylon, and This Year's Love. What does? By the way, does he play his hits?
Oh, he does. Yeah.
Yeah,
he
that's
does,
okay
yeah.
because
he
you're.
He plays most of White Ladder.
You see, because that I remember, and again, this is 20 years ago. Cat Stevens, Yusuf, changed his name. He came to the Three Arena. And it was jammed because it was the first time he was doing a concert. But he insisted on doing new music, okay? All his new work.
Yeah,
and the
concert, the
crowd, got rowdier and rowdier and rowdier. And eventually someone shouted up to him, and they started heckling him, which, and there's an irony in this somewhere, if I was able to give out the full sentence. He said, the man shouted up, play Peace Train, you be, and the word, the use of the word Peace Train and the B word in the same sentence was highly unusual. But that's what people were getting it. But anyway, David did his hits and anyway, baffling.
Oh, he did, yeah.
Listen, okay, well, we've told the Three Arena, they say they've dealt with it, and we'll also ask them about that loose chair scenario. Eamon, good to meet a Margaret. Eamon Farrell, what's the next concert you're going to, so I can avoid it, Eamon?
I'll stick with the darts, I think.
Okay, now I'd go to Daniel O'Donnell if I was you. I'd go to Daniel. Okay, good. All right, I'll tell you who's on. I'll tell you who's on very soon. Paul Harrington's on in the National Concert Hall with PK, Pat Kenny as the MC from, you know,
very
that
good
piece, the lyrics, the thing.
Yeah.
He does it every week. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Look up the National Concert Hall. That'll be a fantastic concert. Okay, good to meet him, Margaret Eamon.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mary Murphy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Good. We're talking about drafts, but it's not a black and white issue. You want to you want to start the draft.
I prefer the whites.
Okay. You want to start a drafts club, is that right?
Well, I was just thinking of maybe if people wanted to play them.
And how long have you been playing drafts?
Since I was about 10 years old and less.
And he's still playing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the one game, now.
I know. And who, so to speak, Mary, who do you play with?
Well, at the moment I'm playing with my sister.
Okay. And how often?
Yeah.
How often would you jump over her, so to speak?
Jump over? It's more the other way around. She jumps over me a lot. Well, at the moment, we've only played two games so far today. And
oh, you played two?
We're starting the third one now. I'll wait till after your call and then we'll start the third one.
And what you have, you have a nice little draft set in front of you. Is it in the same spot all the time?
Well, we're in my sister's house at the moment.
No, but I mean, it's a checkers board, it's a drafts board.
Oh, it's a draft board, yeah.
But it's always out, or do you put it in a box? Oh, do you follow me?
Well, it's in the box, but we take it out as soon as I come in the front door.
Because you just love it.
I love drafts, yeah.
And Mary, can you talk during drafts?
Well, I'd stop playing while I'm talking because anything could happen.
Yeah, well, what's your sister's name? What's your sister's name? Peggy, is that what you say?
Peggy, yeah.
So you're playing with Peggy and you're playing drafts. So you wouldn't try and distract Peggy. So you could.
No.
You wouldn't.
No.
Okay, and who normally wins?
Peggy does.
Does she? Oh, hello. And what's the, like, does she, for every game you win, how many does Peggy win?
Well, last week she won 11 and I won 5, I think.
That's not bad. So you play it a lot. Like that. So where do you want to start the drafts club?
I know, I was just thinking we're for Parish Hall and St. Margaret's, and I do a Cayley Club, I do a few things, and so I was thinking that maybe for something else to do, now that we're retired and nothing else to do in the morning, it would be nice to have the morning. Club.
And what do you love about...
So I'm going to try it. I'm only going to start next week on Tuesday.
Okay, well done. And what do you love about drafts?
It's just a pass the time, the kick over there. It's one game I always talk to.
And yesterday we were talking about drafts and I was asking for tips. And what is your... Give me one tip if I want to win at drafts. So you're not quite...
Keep your eyes on the board.
I should be
keep
asking...
Keep your mind on it as well.
I should be asking Peggy. Peggy, yeah. Peggy wins. 2-1. Are you there, Peggy?
She won't talk to anybody.
So, no. you play another game.
She's very private, she said.
So you play another game in a few minutes. Great. And we'll try and get it. I was told yesterday that... What's Peggy saying?
Sorry? She said she won't talk to anybody, especially when she's playing drafts.
Well done. Well, she's talking away there, Peggy. You're talking away. Yesterday we were told one of the tips in drafts was always hold your back line.
They say to hold in the back line as long as you can.
And when will you start playing the next game?
We're ready to go. We have the board set out here now and all.
And how long does it last for?
Well, it could last 15 minutes. It could last 3 minutes.
Okay. And what's the longest it could last for?
Well, we played one there a while ago and we're over a quarter of an hour.
Okay. True. Peggy, will you turn off the radio in the background?
Peggy, turn that off for a minute.
Yeah, thanks, Peggy.
You're blocking the sound, honey.
Okay, best of luck, Peggy, in the background. And Mary, best of luck in your new game. And let's hope you get the drafts club started as soon as possible. And what did you say? You always prefer white rather than the black.
Yeah.
Okay. And is Peggy agreeable?
Yes.
Thank God. Well, she's disagreeing with me now. After 70 or 80 years, she'd want to be. Keep going, Mary, and let's get this drafts club off the ground. Mind yourself.
Yes, be nice.
God bless you.
Okay, all the best.
Okay, bye, Mary. Bye. Thanks indeed.
My children meet you at a draft board somewhere.
We will, surely. We'll do checkers.
Okay.
See you later.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
After 37 wonderful years here in RTE and 27 years presenting Liveline, I just wanted to share a few words with you as I prepare to move on. First of all, it has been, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, an incredible honour and a privilege to be part of a programme that relied almost entirely on trust, the trust of our listeners. Listeners felt he could pick up the phone, ring Liveline, share their lives, their problems, their stories, sad, bad, sometimes mad and funny, their struggles and their victories. I never took that for granted, not for a single minute. Over these years, I've been blessed to work alongside hundreds of producers, researchers, broadcasting assistants and the wider public servants who make RTE. And when I say everyone, I mean everyone. Those who lift the paintbrush, wield the Black & Decker, a Hoover, operate a sound desk from the person at reception to the person climbing a mast. We were and are all working towards the same goal, serving the public. And it goes without saying that my wife June and my three children, Sean, Ellen and Ronan, have been such a part of keeping me going day after day, often through difficult times on an intense daily programme. For that alone, I'm deeply privileged and eternally grateful. As the American poet Maya Angelou wrote, "People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." And I hope in some small way, through Liveline and through RTE, we made people feel heard. And now, after many happy years, I've decided the time has come to move on. I wrote to the head of radio last November, informing her that, having already extended my contract for 2 years, that Friday, June the 27th next, when it was due to expire, would be my final day on Liveline. As you know, and I've often said it, I know I'm not a firefighter or a paramedic or a teacher or even looking after young children at this stage. These are a street cleaner, a nurse, you know the list I always use. These are real, essential public servants and deserve all our praise and support. As my late mother used to say, Mabel said, "You're not to lose the run of yourself, you're just answering the phones." Well, I was trying to listen, trying to connect, trying to give people a voice, especially those without. Mabel, who died 2 years ago this Sunday, would have been 96. And on the day she was born, the Irish Parliament was debating the abolition of workhouses. We have come a long way. Like many of her generation who've been great Liveline listeners, remember, you dug the well and subsequent generations drank the water. As a country, a community, we've come an awful long way. Liveline began, as you know, under the great stewardship of the late Marion Finucane 40 years ago this year, and it will endure. So onwards, I'm looking forward to the next chapter. Please, please keep talking to Joe. I'm here till the end of June. I will explain a bit more tomorrow on the Late Late Show. But meanwhile, we are back tomorrow at 1:45. And in real news, there is no smoke from the Vatican City at this stage, so stay tuned. On sound, James Feeney, BCO's Mary Elizabeth Bruton, research by Richie Byrne. Today's producer was Emily Phelan, and Ray Darcy is next.